This is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be hashing out the issue of potato players in D&D. Someone who shows up, sits quietly, doesn't really engage. We're going to kick off some ideas to keep your players interested and also pass on some strategies to keep you from being passive yourself. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Oh, before we begin today's hot topic, I will remind everyone, as always, that at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our live after party chat, and you can join in on that. All you have to do is visit patreon.com/wanderingdm, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our private Discord server. Get your account all set up on Discord and ready to go, and about 10 minutes after the show, Dan and I will log in there to host a live video chat with anyone who's around.
We love that part of our week. We love our patrons. For example, our patron Backrius is checking in that we're currently live on Twitch and YouTube and Restreambot. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. Paul, I'd never heard of this phrase potato players until you brought it up. What's that about?
You know, I don't know how widely used the term actually even is, but I picked it up from a dear friend and former cast member of 10 Dead Rats, Colleen. We go to a lot of the same conventions, and she started using this term for just, you know, that player. And this, I mean, maybe is more typical of something you might encounter in a convention because it's open to the public, you know, anyone can sign up for any game. But you occasionally get that player who shows up and they're just a potato. I can't think of a better word for it, right? They take up space, they sit there in their seat. And they really just utterly don't participate.
Yeah.
And it's challenging. And depending on what type of game you're playing, it can be more or less challenging. But it is generally, it can be just an energy suck, right? Of like you're, yeah. especially at a convention where you've prepared a lot, you've got your energy up, you're hyped, you're ready to go, and then there's just this black hole of the potato who's just sitting there, giving you nothing.
I find it to be awkward. I'm in my head as DM, I'm like, am I doing something wrong here? Is something going awry? So
So let's talk a little bit more about some of the variations of potato, right? So it's easy to confuse just a quiet player for a potato, and I don't want to accidentally do that, right? Some players are quiet, you know, we should always make space for introverts. But the thing about one thing I've noticed is a quiet player is still maybe they're like observing, right? Is you have their focus, right? Their attention, and if directly asked something, they'll usually answer. Whereas often a potato is elsewhere, right? Maybe they got their phone out, or they're just not paying attention, or they're looking at what's going on at the table over there next to them, they're just. Right, utterly disengaged, and that is the worst. That is the worst, and it is a fine line between those two things, right? And that's the reason this topic came up. I was talking to my partner Tanya, who's a little new to role playing games. We have our regular quest game happening; just had one last yesterday, which was great. And she's worried. She's because she hangs out with all the same people I hang out with, and she's heard Colleen talk about potatoes, and I, of course, agree with Colleen. And so we'll have a chat about like, oh man, I had a potato at my table the other night. And she goes, oh no, what if I'm a potato, right? How do I not be a potato? I don't want to be a potato. So that's where this topic actually came from, was her telling me like, oh, I'd love to hear you talk about like how not to be a potato.
Interesting. Fascinating. Well, good for her for being self-aware that might even ask the question.
Right. Which frankly is probably in all the proof you need that you're not a potato, right? Like if you're self-aware of like, no, I want to be present in the game. Well, that's certainly the best first step is, you know,
precisely.
Be present, right? Mm-hmm. Remove distractions, yes. you know, yes. Focus in on the game and make that your priority of what you're, you know, the social contract you have with the other people at the tables. We're all here to play a game together. Be here.
Right.
Play the game with us.
Yes. Yes. And that would be my, that was going to be my first thing that I said as advice to players is do, you know, recommend that you do make time and be focused for the game specifically. And probably, you know, tip number one is avoid the phone, get off, you know, really strictly avoid being on the phone, because that's going to, or other, you know, if you're in your home playing, avoid chores, avoid other distractions. I mean, if we're having like a party type event in our home, you know, if you're doing a bunch of hosting, like getting snacks and food and dishes, maybe you can't simultaneously be in a game while you're doing all that other stuff. So, you know, multitasking is really deadly to the creative mental process. So that would be the first thing is get the phone and the other distractions out of there. And just, I'm here for the game for this period.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and if you are going to be in that situation, I guess, you know, because these things are reasonable, right? You might, maybe you're hosting a party and yes, I do need to like play host as well as I'd like to be, you know, maybe part of the game a little bit, but I can't give it 100% of my attention. Talk to the DM about that. Look for specific games. I think this is something I mentioned early on. Different games tolerate potatoes at different levels, right? Like if we're playing a GM-less game that is completely improv, like we're playing Fiasco, there's just no space for a potato at the Fiasco table. It's just not going to work, right?
Right.
Whereas if we're playing a classic D&D game and you've got a, you know, somebody at the helm DMing and there's like eight players, yeah, you could probably withstand one person being like, well, I'm just the frontline fighter and just tell me when I need to make a roll and I'll swing, and otherwise, you know, everybody
maybe
else
so.
Spotlight, you know, you've got a little more space for that.
Maybe so. Yeah. I mean, a thought that I had on with slightly different on that is I'm wondering if, because another piece of advice I would say is, you know, come a little bit prepared as a player, know the special abilities of your character, know the special things on your sheet that's cool, that's special in the mechanics of your character. Also, I feel like know the dice. I feel like I have a little bit of a burr on just totally not knowing the dice and people who like repeatedly have to be told by other players which die to pick up is a little bit of a drag. So I would say like learn, maybe pick out the couple dice you're gonna need to use. And I'm wondering on the issue of character abilities, if there isn't a difference between you know, to me, modern D&D, which is a little bit overwhelming. I mean, there's so many rules that have accreted over time, and feats and ability scores and the skills and the magic items and all this, that I'm wondering if there isn't occasionally information overload in a game like that that causes people to have kind of analysis paralysis. And I'm wondering if, like, on a standard theme that we hit, if older, simpler, stripped down games aren't easier to engage with, aren't easier to understand what your couple of options are there. And I mean, I've always said that for original D&D, you give somebody a fighter and you just go, you don't need to know any rules. Just like you have a sword and a shield and your feet and your brain and your eyes, and you're just going to reason through the game with a whole bunch of mundane things that would work like they do in the real world for you. Am I off base on that? But I feel like it might be easier to get into one of those simpler games.
I mean, I think it depends on what you're looking for, right? And it depends on why you joined the game even in the first place, right? Like, it maybe you really enjoy those crunchier games and you want to understand the rules inside and out. Maybe you're looking to learn it, right? Maybe you joined a convention game of a complex system because you've never played it before and you want to play with someone who knows it really well so that you can learn that system. That is a reasonable place to be. But, you know, again, in that case, I would be, you know, want to make sure the listing says, like, is this a game that is built to teach? Like, are we expecting newbies at this game, and there's going to be space and time for the DM to teach players the rules, you know, or is this going to be more fast paced? And we're really hoping to just have people who are well versed at the table.
Let me, there's a comment I'd like to respond to that I think is really interesting if we can get this on screen here. So this is a comment by @Jamisid, who kind of responding to my diatribe about the phone, is saying, I don't know, I think looking at your phone is rude, but if I'm at a table and I'm not actually enjoying what's going on in the session, it can be better to be quiet than to grab attention. And this is interesting because I actually kind of expected that counter argument. And I do think that I do suspect that more disengagement is a result of being on people's phone than disengagement causing people to turn to their phone. And there's for what it's worth, there's similar like medical issues about like, does being overweight cause sleep apnea, or does sleep apnea cause you to become overweight? Which one of those? And it might not be in the direction that people originally thought. I would suggest try. And I'm not a big phone culture guy, much to Paul's aggravation from time to time. But I would suggest, like, let's try practicing and just committing to, I'm not going to be on my phone for 2 or 4 hours, and just see whether the flow is different or not, as opposed to something isn't quite going my way, and I know that I've got the phone as a backup attention grabber. That's an interesting thought, Gemma said, and I suspect it might quite possibly be in the other direction a lot of the time, not 100%.
That is apparently a good friend of the show, Joshua. Welcome, thank you for the good question, Joshua. I can just hear visualize Isabel off to the side, rolling her eyes at what I assumed is the French jamused. The interesting thing to me about it is it's sort of the side question of like, but what if I'm disengaged for other reasons, right? I'm disengaged because, you know, this game's not my cup of tea. I don't like the way the DM is running it. It didn't turn out to be what I thought it was going to be. Other things in my life are distracting me, and my brain just isn't in the space to play this game right now. Any of a variety of reasons, right? Then is it more polite for me to just back away and intentionally become a potato? Ooh, couldn't get that one out. Intentionally become a potato, right? You know, or maybe do the one thing I want to suggest, which is really difficult, and I've only really seen it done once in my life, is do the hard thing and say, hey, you know what? This isn't working for me. I think it would be best if I just...
Yeah.
I think I lean a bit, and it's hard. And it, you know, the number of times I've done it in gaming is very small. I did this at a professional office yesterday, is to rip the Band-Aid off and say, I'm not doing this. I'm out of here. We'll talk about it later. I have been advised by people close to me that you can diplomatically, put nuance in why something's come up and the friend needs assistance or something like that, and step away or something, which hurts me on the not entirely truthful level. But I
recall a story of a friend being in a terrible game and glancing at their phone and going, oh my God, my wife's in labor. Take off. a blatant lie.
That's great. But
his wife was present at the convention and obviously pregnant, so a pretty decent lie. But is it a kind lie, or it's a lie born of kindness, right?
Like, it's playing a role, it's what's happening.
I think it's a good thing as long as you're not torpedoing the game. Of course, there's always the case of like, oh, by my absence, now there's not enough humans at the table, and I've actually just ruined the game. I feel for. And then I'm like, oh man, I don't know at that point, take the bullet or, you know, do what do you do at that point? But I think it's I think it's reasonable, you know, and I've not had anyone do it to me either, but I feel like I would, you know, especially if I have plenty of people at the table and somebody's just not feeling it, and they said to me, hey, you know, this game isn't for me and I'm going to take off. I'm like, well, cool. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
If someone walks out of a class or someone walks out of a performance or something like that, it's not a great feeling. I notice it and I'm like, I'm stung for 2 seconds, and then hopefully pretty quickly I'm on to the next thing, and it's not a long-term thing. And frankly, it's probably, you know, we get it over better and it's a better use of your time than to just like be grinding against that rough spot for 2 hours. And I've said in the past, there's criticism about games like, you know, old style games like Monopoly, where people get ejected from the game, frankly. But I would prefer to be just out and go do something else than to be, you know, incapable of taking any action. Same thing for like fate points and things like that that keep you in the game when you can't really do anything.
You know, there's also the I think classic experience that seems to just organically happen of somebody saying, you know what, this is, I hate this character, I'm just going to get myself killed and get out. And so they just go full Leroy Jenkins and then proceed to have an amazing time and do be incredibly successful because they're just super action-oriented and just, I'm going to kick in every door, I'm going to go for it. And they just, you know, by dumb luck, do really well, which is hilarious. Okay, but I want to shift the conversation here, Dan. Interesting as it is, like, let's focus on Tanya's question here, which is, from the perspective of somebody who's like maybe just a little quiet, maybe feels like they don't have the rapid fire wit to come up with stuff real like right on the spot, you know, to contribute. Just has a tendency, is enjoying the game, but just has a tendency to maybe be a little more on the quiet side and contribute a little less, and is worried, oh, am I a potato? I don't want to be perceived as a potato. How can I engage more? What do we say to that player?
I might be. So my top advice is you come a little bit prepared, be present, expect to be present for that. Those are probably my top points there. Embrace that you're going to get the opportunity to make decisions. And, I'll just interject. So last night, I went to a rather like a 5-hour improv event here at the Barrow Group here in New York that does a lot of acting classes and stuff like that. And so there was a drop-in class. There were a couple of shows. There was a late night improv jam that we participated in. And I was surprised that there were a relatively large number of people, at least 4 or 5 or 6, that entered this drop-in class, had paid for it, frankly, and then declined to participate in the exercises where they were in front of other people. And that might be an interesting little found experiment, because it started off with small group work where the whole room is all going in a cacophony, but you're working with 2 or 3 people, and these folks were doing very well. Like, I worked with them, and they're like, first timers, you're doing great. I feel so comfortable with you, and you're totally getting it. And then when it came time for 2/3 of the class to sit down as an audience, and maybe 5 or 6 people stand up in the lights in front of people watching them, these people just declined to get up. They were just like, not for me tonight. I'm sorry. And and I was surprised. I don't think I've seen a whole host of people like that. And they were well-spoken, and they were energetic, and they were doing great before that. And so there might be, you know, a fear of doing the wrong thing in front of other people, in front of people that are more experts in the performance that you're doing there. And so my advice for that would be to, you know, you're going to have to do this. You're going to have to stumble your way in the first time. And then that first time will be passed in the past for you. And how great is it to get an opportunity, like in our role-playing games, to get to make decisions for yourself? You know, there's a lot of people in the world that just don't get to make their own decisions. And that sucks so bad. And here we are. I think the whole point to D&D and other role-playing games is an opportunity to practice making decisions in what hopefully is a safer space. You're not literally putting your life and limb at risk. And I think that that capacity for me, you know, I've gone through phases in my life where I haven't had the opportunity. Making decisions for yourself is a muscle you need to exercise. And you get better, you get, the more you do it, the better you get at it, and the better it feels, and the more empowered you feel from that. And I think that embracing the idea of I get to practice making decisions for myself will serve to spark that engagement and get you started.
Nice. I think that's a nice take. It's a nice take, Dan. I thought you were going to go in this direction of like easing yourself into the numbers of people, right? Especially in that case of like, oh, they were doing great in this small group exercise. Maybe try a few one-on-one DM and one player games. You know, maybe play some like two or three player, smaller groups, right? See how that works.
That is a thought that did occur. I mean, people are time constrained. I don't know if you're aware of that, Paul. And I didn't know if I wanted to recommend, you know, but I actually did. A neuron did fire of like, are they okay with a one-on-one game? Are they okay with two or three players? That might be a really interesting experiment to run like that, actually.
Yeah. I have a few other pieces of advice that came to my mind. Right, especially if you find yourself in that mental space of like, well, I'm just not creative or just not feeling creative right now, right? Like, I don't know what to make up. You know, everybody's coming up with this crazy cool stuff at the table, and I just don't feel like I have anything worthwhile to contribute. My advice to that is you don't have to invent from whole cloth. Go become another character's cheerleader. Go, like, you know, whatever that person's doing that you find delightful, back it up. Right? Make their goals your goals.
So good. That's such a good advice. I've done that with specifically if I get like a couple times, if I get in a superhero game and I specifically ask for one of the top powered heroes, and I've had referees go, oh, Dan's a power gamer and he's trying to break the game. But I tell him, here's what I'm specifically going to do. I'm going to follow somebody else. I'm going to find some kind of weak brainiac and I'm going to go, you're clearly smarter than me. You tell me what to break. I'm so happy to break. I don't even care. Yeah. You tell me what to go bust up. I'm here. And that's a great thing to do. This, Paul, was actually the first exercise in the improv class tonight. Was specifically everybody paired up, played rock, paper, scissors one round, and then whoever lost had to become the other person's manager, had to become the hype man. Right. And then was like, yeah, look at they're a fantastic rock, paper, scissors player. Find another pairing and then have a growing entourage. Right. Until it culminated with the class of like 30 people with like two people facing off with like 15 cheerleaders. And I will say that this just coincidentally almost came down to me versus Isabel.
That's great.
So that is a great fun. That is a great fun way to play it. Absolutely.
You know. The other thing that came to my mind, of course, is you know, we had Karen Twelves on the show a while back, and you're talking about improv. Karen Twelves wrote the book Improv for Gamers, and specifically, she mentions in the opening of that book that this comes from a practice of her actually running improv exercises for gamers at the start of convention. Like, you would do an event at a convention of, we're just going to do a bunch of improv exercises with the idea that now you can take this with you as you go play other games. And so actually I loaned that book to Tanya when we were having this conversation. I was like, maybe read this book. Maybe there's some good stuff in there. And there probably is, but also that book I think is very much, most of that book is just like, here are a bunch of improv exercises and a little explanation about why they might help you. Make space to actually do some of those exercises, maybe. Mm-hmm. I remember one year at HelgaCon, Adam ran a game that involved, I can't remember exactly what it was, I think, but it involved characters who were definitely in some kind of hierarchical power structure. And so before we even sat down and played the game, he had the players do a quick improv exercise about power exchange.
Yeah.
And about playing different levels of you know power differentiators between each other, just to get ourselves in that headspace.
Yeah, interesting.
Very interesting. I think that's clever. You know.
Yeah. Little aside, I will say, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I've never been at a convention where Karen was running one of these, but I think right. I would jump at that if I saw that. If I saw that at one of the conventions I went to, if I saw like, hey, let's do a bunch of improv exercises in the first day of the con, I'd be like, hell yeah, I would do that. Nice. Sure.
That's great. Yeah. Little aside, I will say that after we interviewed Karen Twelves, I did take an actual improv class here in New York, and her book, just coincidentally or not, was basically matched the syllabus of the class. So I could more or less like read chapter one, and that was the first week, and then chapter two of her book, which just was exactly what we're doing in the second week. So I will say, if you do queue up to take actual improv classes, Karen's book basically gives you the template. So if you read that, you'll basically know what you're getting into in advance. Yeah.
and then the last little piece of advice I want to give, of course, is just like, you know, be a consumer of other media and steal liberally, right? Read books, watch movies.
Yeah.
When you see a character that you're like, this character is super cool, I love what they're doing, you know, make note of that. And the next time you sit down at the role-playing table, be that character or steal some aspects of that character, right? Invoke that. This is a trick I do as DMing all the time, right? Whenever especially when you have to juggle lots of NPCs, I'll often write down like, oh, this NPC behaves just like so-and-so from such and such, right? This is absolutely Leslie from Parks and Rec, right? And I just put that in there. And then I like, it just immediately grounds me in like, what's this character like? Oh, it's like this other character I saw on this other thing.
You know, there's a comment here. Maybe this is actually what you were responding to. So one of our viewers, what is their name here? I guess this is Tanya Yannick 6721, who's asking mentally, what helps your creativity getting into character? Do you draw on characters, you know, from TV shows, et cetera? Okay. So I think that's exactly what you're responding to. So
absolutely.
Good anticipation.
Yeah. That's funny. Sometimes characters from a TV show, or sometimes just raw actors. Like, you know, a lot of actors just have big personalities all on their own, right? You know, this I could play a character who is The Rock, or, you know, Schwarzenegger, or, you know, Danny DeVito, right? Like, I don't even have to think of a specific
Glover.
Thing they're in. Crispin Glover. This character is Chris. Okay, yep, I know what that means right away. You know? I've certainly, like, and then there are certain cases, right, where it's just like, oh, I love this aspect of this character in the show. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's awesome. That's great.
Let's talk. So the other piece of advice now, Dan, as we're having this conversation, of course, one of the things I was worried about doing this on this particular show is that I would say our quotient of experienced DMs to newbie players is probably skewed in a certain direction.
Correct.
That maybe this advice is not for a lot of our viewers. So how do we make it more for our viewers? So I want to flip the question and say, like, okay, you're a DM and you have a player who's new and is like, I don't really, you know, I'm not sure how to participate more. How do you help that person as the DM during game time?
Yeah, this feels easier to answer, actually, right?
really?
From our experience of like you and I, this is the part that we've dealt with personally a little bit more. So I want to make sure that the new player or someone that's being a little bit reticent, I want to make sure that at some point they get the spotlight on them and I give them a very specific offer, I guess, in improv language of make a moment where it's about them and invite / force them to, you know, be present with their character and make a decision about something. And if it's like in a combat situation, I with newer players, I tend to give them more decision time. So with my expert players, where I want to get to is, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? What do you do? And then with a newer player, I go, okay, I just remind you of the situation. I might list some options. You could do A, you could do B, you could do C, or something else. But I do try to find a moment where there's some kind of specific offer, or they're in a city situation and some, you know, street thief comes out, specifically starts interacting with them, they're the only one that can do anything about it.
Yep.
To try to get some kind of spotlight on that player in this session.
Yeah, you know, a great way to do this is, especially in a fantasy game, is to make them the conduit of communication. Maybe they're the only person who understands a certain language, the only person who can read this magic text, the only person who can see this ghost, whatever it is, right?
Yes.
They become the conduit of like, well, you know, the rest of the table can only hear your end of the conversation. They have to pretend like they don't understand anything I'm saying. Right. It's a nice way to kind of put them in the spotlight.
Yeah. And I have accidentally run into beautiful moments where they had to engage with some kind of monster camp, and that player just happened to be the one character that had that language on their character sheet in D&D, and it just blossomed. I didn't expect it. I stumbled into it and just blossomed in this beautiful moment where that's the only person that can actually communicate with the horrible monsters that they need to coordinate with. And that works. That has worked really wonders when you can make that happen.
Yeah. And there's lots of variants of this too, right? Give them the telepathic sentient magic weapon, right? Like, or whatever it is, you know, something where they, you know, it turns out they are carrying the MacGuffin, whatever.
Yeah, I like that. And the other thing. Okay, so let me, again, bouncing off the all-night improv session that I was at. I'm thinking out loud here because I'm evaluating something that the class instructor, and I've seen a number of improv instructors. The improv instructor last night, who I've never met before, was surprisingly, aggressive is not exactly the right word, but took first timers and just dunked them right in the deep end. Just had them on stage, had them doing complicated cuts and edits, and just like I wouldn't have myself thought to ask people to do that kind of fairly complicated stuff. But you know, I'm thinking like you come out and you're like, I did the thing. Like I did all this most complicated stuff. You know, maybe not at a professional level, but I know that I can get through it and I can do it and I can survive. And, there was a particular moment where you had two people doing a scene. One person was brand new and they wanted out. And
yeah,
right, they're in character, they're playing, and they're you know, they're feeling the awkwardness, and they're kind of getting through it. And so what they did oh no, that's a scary monster, and they ran off stage. And the instructor was like, nope, you're still in the scene. Come back. It's not done until somebody else says it's over. So they came back. And they were in it, and it was like, this is crazy. I gotta get out of here, and walk to the back line. And the instructor's like, nope, it's not over. Nope, you're not. You're still in the scene. You're gonna engage with what they just said. How is, you know, why are you the husband, but you're also the boss? How is that? They come back, and this happened like five times, and the instructor did not let them off the hook. Bailed like five times. Finally got them to a beat of just saying yes about something, and the instructor was like, great, that's exactly what we're looking for. And I walked up to him. I was like, hey, what you're doing here is remarkably malevolent, and it's so exactly how I run a class or a game session. It's very warm to my heart. I feel so wonderful to have seen that, what you just did. And so it's interesting, you know, maybe you can, at your gaming table, you can arrange a moment and not let the player off the hook. Maybe if you're a mean DM like me, really hang until they make some kind of decision, just to get over that point and see how it feels. You know, I'm not 100% convinced, but I've seen it happen, and I think if anybody does that kind of thing, it might be me possibly. So be on the lookout for that, players.
Well, yeah. Okay. I mean, as much as I like. We got here because we were talking about like take the new person and give them the spotlight for a bit.
Yeah.
I am worried that we've gone too far in that direction of like, if they're just constantly under this spotlight, you're gonna like, you got to give them a little relief, right? You can't.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm just saying.
You hate attention. You get all of the attention all the time.
Yeah. No. Not what we're saying whatsoever. No.
Right.
But I think maybe once. Try it once.
Here, Joshua's got another nice comment for us here, which is, he says, feels like people attending an improv class are volunteering for that in a way that somebody joining a home group might not, especially if they're there because they're a friend of so-and-so or somebody in the group. Right. Like I kind of agree with that, right? Like you sign up for an improv class, like you kind of asked for this, right? are you asking for this treatment when you're signing up for a game at a convention or at a friend's house?
Now I'll say not every improv instructor is going to do that. Of like half a dozen improv instructors, that was furthest out on that end of the continuum. So I've certainly seen even the majority of improv instructors be more gentle and be like, sure, you're doing so well at this and we'll do better later on. We'll try something else. So this isn't even the usual thing for improv classes, I will point out. So this outlier example is something I'm kind of bouncing around in my head.
Yeah. And a little bit, I think the answer to that is like, well, yeah, you probably should, especially if it's a new person, meaning like, if you have a new person at your table, whether it's because you're running a one shot or because it's their first time or whatever, probably is worth a little bit at the beginning of saying like, this is what I expect. This is what we're about to do, right? Set the expectations a little bit, and you can address the whole table, but be kind of also addressing this person to say like, yeah, everybody at some point is going to get the focus. Everyone at some point is going to have the spotlight on them and be, you know, required to participate. And that's what this game is. Right.
Yeah. If carry through on that.
The kind of game you're trying to run. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And carry through on that if you say that up front. I try to be careful about not making too many promises about what's going to happen just in case I fail to follow through on that.
Yeah. It is true. Right. Especially when you have a bigger table, sometimes I worry about that too of like, yeah. Did I get everyone? Did everybody get a little time? Right. Did I accidentally.
But being aware of that. As the referee, right, there is this meta awareness of you're running the game, but you also have to be aware of the room around you and everybody together. So I do, and that's difficult because you are multitasking a little bit. So I do try to be aware of the overall energy of the group and the individuals and see what's going on to try to find that moment of like if someone's kind of tuning out, try to find that moment to give them an opportunity at least to a spotlight moment.
Yeah, you know, something I worry about as DM is that I often feel like I'm overcompensating, right? That I'm like, man, I'm just always picking on the quiet player. But a little of that is because the people who are going to grab the spotlight, they're going to grab the spotlight. They don't need me.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas the person who is being quiet, they need this. Yeah. So I'm going to provide that. It is hard though to find that line of like, am I picking on them too much? Am I giving them a good time? Am I drawing them out?
I totally agree. That is non-trivial. That's a non-trivial problem to try to dial in. And you know, different people are going to respond different ways. And if they're a new person to me, then I'm not going to know in advance about exactly how that's going to work. That's a non-trivial thing, but same for you DMs. Get in there, try it. Yeah, you're gonna stumble a couple times, get on the other side of that, and you will get better through the initial couple of stumbles that you make. So don't put blinders on, pretend that you're not seeing it. If you're seeing it, say the thing. Sometimes I go, is everything okay over there? To you player is a possibility, and then see if you can give them a spotlight moment. You know, something else I want to say is that I tend to go in the direction of barring other players from directing them. So both as player and DM, I don't like expert player Alice telling newbie player Bob, move here, do this, take out your sword, cast sleep now. I'm really not super fond of that. And so either try to, you know, brush that off. I say, it's up to Bob. Bob, it's your turn. It's up to you. You should do whatever feels best to you right, in character at this moment. And I might even step in and do something like, there's no time to communicate here in this fight. Things are happening too quickly. You can't give a whole detailed strategic playbook analysis in these 6 seconds. We don't want to hear that. But if I don't like, and once in a while I've seen, you should move here, 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 like with, you know, D&D attack of opportunity. No, move here, here, diagonally, move this, skip that, move over here. And I'm like, yeah, this is not chess. And even if this was chess, you tell another player how to play. So I do try to say this, it's your decision. Whatever your gut is telling you right now makes the most sense. That is what you should do. And I've had players go, I'm worried about making the wrong move. And
interesting,
it's far more important to own it.
I'm fascinated by how much you're focusing on combat. Whereas generally when I think of the potato problem, I usually think of it in out of combat, in more role play situations. Maybe combat is interesting because it is that moment where everybody gets their turn, right? You get, this yeah. is your time to yeah. do what you want to do. And I'm asking you directly as an individual what you want to do. So maybe it's a little more pointed in that case. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think potatoes are more or less problematic or likely to encounter problems themselves or struggle in combat versus non-combat situations?
Well, that's an interesting point. That's actually an interesting point. I feel it's probably easier to solve. I might say it's easier to solve in a combat situation where, like you're saying, everybody has an independent turn. And maybe I might need someone else to advise me about how to do it in other situations where you might have effectively a party leader or a caller or a speaker, who is interacting with another, negotiating with another party or something like that. And you can't literally have all 8 voices going on at once. So I feel like it's easier to find something like equity, or it's easier to give the person the spotlight in that round by round situation. And yeah, if you have a charismatic speaker who's always doing the diplomacy, that's an even harder, if that's a problem, that's even harder to solve.
Yeah. You know, in the combat situation, like as much as you were talking about, like you try to stop Alice from telling Bob you should do X, Y, and Z, I will do the inverse often as DM, where I will try to say, Bob, you could do X or Y or Z. Here are some options, right?
Like mm-hmm. that's yes.
sometimes a player needs that, right? A little bit of help of like, yeah, no, there's a lot of different things, right? And I don't know, sometimes I worry that's not being helpful if they're like, especially being indecisive, I don't know what I should do. And I'm like, well, here's lots of options for you.
I do the exact really same thing. This thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I do the exact same thing with that, and I feel like either 2 options or 3 is fine. So I do 1, yep. 2, 3, or something else. And none of the above is always on that yep. list. I think 3 things, right? There's the magical number 7, which is people's short-term memory cap. So yep. I think like no, 3 options seems okay. Yeah.
So that's,
and sometimes it's attack or run or try to negotiate or something else. It can be as broad as that.
I think as DM, it's easier to keep your kind of, you know, your hand on the throttle in the combat situations than the non-combat situations, right? Where it got my hackles up more is when poor Alice, we're picking on Alice so much, but when poor Alice is just jumping up every time there's a discussion I have with an NPC, anytime there's a planning session of what should we as a party do, Alice is just being very forceful about, we should do this, 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 and I'm going to tell the NPC this, this, this. Like in those cases, I often find myself trying to come up with reasons in the game to split the party up. Right. Let's find a way make Alice not be there. Right. Let's find a reason for the group to kind of split up, and so that maybe one of the quieter players is in a situation where, like, well, sorry, Alice, you're not here. You can't contribute this time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. As a super old school DM, I and Paul, you do it all the time. I shouldn't be surprised. Paul successfully and cleverly splitting the party up because it works super great at Paul's tables, and I never think about it on my own when I'm running games. I never think about that, and I also am like, you know, I'm acclimated to being okay with a single charismatic collar leader. Kind of running. Now, I'm also biased by the fact that I haven't really seen this be a problem at my tables. So what happens in practice is that player is, anytime I can think of it, getting legitimate feedback from everybody at the table. Do you have ideas? And then does everybody agree that we should do this? And then coordinating that. And that is not, I will confess, not a thing that I've had practice dealing with as a problem. So my players themselves do a pretty good job of incorporating or engaging all the players at the table when they need to make a party group decision.
I think it's more likely to come up, I think, with the larger groups, right? If you have a table of like 8 players, and you're trying to do everything collaboratively as a group, it's easier for overbearing Alice to just kind of take over and for you to miss as GM, oh, this person isn't getting an opportunity to contribute. And I feel like maybe in smaller groups that's less likely to happen.
Just because
as DM it's easier to notice. I don't know. I'm kind of not sure if I believe the words I'm saying right now. But I think that is true. And I think more likely that split the party thing is going to happen for me more organically through play, right? Again, it's usually not in a combat situation. Maybe the party's in town at the tavern and they're trying to gather clues or gather information. And if it is a big group, it just seems very natural for them to split. They'll say like, oh, well, we have these like 3 leads. Well, these 3 people should go here and these 4 people should go there. And I'm going to solo go do this thing. And I like that. I like when the party does that. I can split them up. I can jump back and forth between them. I can give them little cliffhangers or whatnot. And it does force the groups into maybe not having, you know, 2 out of those 3 groups don't have Alice present. So
yeah,
somebody else is going to naturally get the spotlight.
Super clever. Super clever. You know, I'll pitch one, I don't know, problem or on this issue of DM being aware of it. Is that I've also had, and you know, we've had discussion in the chat of who was it had the really interesting idea, kind of like this improv spectator thing of, I guess this was Stephen Kennedy 4130 that said, consider sitting in and just watching for a few sessions as a player, like come in and actually just be a recognized spectator. Not the first thought that I would have actually as a DM. I try to roll everybody in the room into the game if I can. But that's an interesting idea. But on the issue of referee being aware of what's going on, I've had one or maybe 2 players that we have game sessions Friday night, and everybody has had a fully long work week, and they've had a long work day, and they show up on Friday, and I've had some people very, very, very tired and fall asleep. I have had people like look over and yeah, they've put their head down and they're on the futon and they are actually snoozing away. And in that case, full disclosure, I'm not going to wake them up. To me, sleep is nigh holy. I do not interrupt anybody's sleep for practically any reason whatsoever. And so just go by the actions going on around them. That's perfectly fine. And I'm not going to give them the spotlight. They're in a place where they are literally not available to become engaged. At one point, I read some writer claiming that one of the finest experiences in life is to go to the opera and fall asleep at the opera. And I'm not gonna test that out. Me, I'm like, I could fall asleep in my bed. Would probably be a more efficient and more complete version of that. But I don't know, maybe going to a role-playing game and falling asleep and waking up and being kind of surprised at the situation, maybe that's a really interesting experience. I don't want to take that away from anybody.
My only experience with that is having been at conventions where maybe I'm not getting very much sleep. I probably have not scheduled myself enough time to sleep, and then and compounded with bad sleep patterns, and then showing up to a game that I really want to participate in, but my body is just going, no, buddy, we're done. It's time to shut down. And I've had even a situation where I was in a game where I was removed myself to the second row, second tier couches, and I'm trying desperately to cling to consciousness and pay attention to what's going on. My body is just passing out on me.
I feel that.
You know, it's a bummer because I super want to participate, but like I really need to just acknowledge to myself, no, it's time to go to sleep. Sleep is not more important right now.
Sometimes
Dan, I want to throw out there because we kind of touched on this of like the just watch thing. I had this happen at a convention not too long ago where literally I was playing a game of Fearful Ends. I had, I think, three players. I had another person walk up and they just said, no, I just want to watch. And they just wanted to like sit at the table amongst the players.
Participate
in the peanut gallery aspect of the game, but not be a character. And
what
I was like,
peanut gallery. What do we mean by the peanut gallery aspect?
Yeah. Discussing with other people at the table what's going on, commenting on the right, like you know, enjoying the moment. Like really, they're engaged. They're focused on the content, and they're like, okay. Oh my gosh, can you believe, right? Yeah. They're part of the peanut gallery, right? They're oh, I can't believe he did blah blah blah, right? Like they're engaged.
I've never seen that character.
No, that's me either. Amazing. I mean, I'm sure you've seen somebody be the peanut gallery because their character's not present or something, right? Blah, blah, blah. But they're still like excited about the scene that's happening. but no, this was a weird one. You just want to what? Okay.
Wow.
You know, it was built. The game I was running was built as a teaching game. I'm teaching the rules and whatnot. So I'm like, okay, maybe you just want to watch, learn how the game goes. I didn't mind it, frankly, because of the energy that they were bringing, right? They were clearly like reinforcing the energy of the game. They weren't.
That's why I'm laughing in delighted surprise that I didn't foresee this part of the story.
That is the weird part, right? Yeah, because you're used to like, oh no, they're gonna be a potato, right? Literally, like that is the opposite of a potato. Even though they're not actively contributing to the game, they're not being a potato.
That's amazing.
Engaged and. You know, reflecting the passion as opposed to just sitting back and serving.
I will admit it would be real hard for me not to give that player a character. I almost don't have in my wheelhouse the capacity to not have that player running a character.
it's very odd. Now it helped in this case. They showed up late, right? And we're like, oh, we're already going, but and exactly that happened, right? We were already in the game and I'm like, I have more characters. I have characters right here. You can jump right in. Oh, no. I just want to watch. I'm like, okay.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was a unique experience.
Wow.
And ultimately in the long run, you know, didn't hate it, but like wouldn't want too much of that, right? Like I wouldn't want majority of people. You're consuming a spot at the table, right? Like
I'm very enthusiastic of like two players on the spotlight and six people like cheering and jeering them as an audience. Like, oh, I can't believe you did that. Oh my goodness. Wow.
I mean, I guess it's exactly that rock, paper, scissors game you were talking about, right? Exactly that's amazing.
Wow.
I don't know. Crazy. I'll have to explore that one a little more because it is, I'm not really sure. It's still a very much outlier experience for me, and I'm still not totally sure what to make of it. And whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
wild.
We're out of time, Dan. So we'll have to save that one for another day. And do you have any final thoughts on how not to be a potato? Or how to
I mean, I so I do, I commit. Commit to the bit. And if you are gonna join a game, if at all possible, I would recommend that you say, this is what I'm going to be focused on for these couple of hours. Prepare a little bit, know about your special abilities, know the dice, put away the phone, try to, you know, focus on the one thing. It's going to make everything better. Embrace the fact that it's good to make decisions. And if you're not, you know, for me, this was our opportunity to practice making decisions, which is great. Always remember that the greatest special ability of your character is your human player brain. So don't cut that off. And that is your superpower right there. So use it.
And I like that you use the word practice, because that's what I would lean into, of like, keep doing it. Keep coming back, keep doing it. If something worked in a game, steal it and use it in another game. Build on it. Add more. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah, keep practicing. You will get better. It's
and like for me, if I have a bad night and I say, oh, I really screwed up on that, I've got to do better next time. That's my main goal when I come back next time, is that's the thing I've got to improve on. So yeah, I agree.
Viewers, if you have opinions on how not to be a potato, how to help a player at your table not be a potato, how to deal with a potato, or just a good recipe for potatoes, please leave us a comment here in the comments section of the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe that'll spin up a new conversation for a future episode.
Definitely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, GitHub, places like that. We have the handle Wandering and DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and decorticate that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can find those files on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also, on various third-party podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those sites and has a button for it, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us.
It really does. And of course, thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Every tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation's continuing around the clock about fantasy games, new players, D&D, horror games, miniature making, all that kind of good stuff. And we just have the smartest patrons with the most creative, clever solutions to your gaming issues and challenges that you could possibly be with. So like Paul said at the top of the hour, we'll be there in about 10 minutes to continue this conversation live with our weekly live video after chat. Paul, remind me what we're doing the weekend of March 20th. Something there.
Is that the week? Expose the fact that I don't really know the calendar, but I'm assuming that must be Gary. Is that Gary Clontang?
Yeah, bingo! Clontang. Bing, 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 okay. Yes. Correct. Points.
Ooh, that's sooner than I thought. Okay, great. Yes, we will be at Gary Con. We will be running our Dungeon Design Dash. We're going to live in front of a live audience and live streamed, hopefully, internet willing, a session of us building a dungeon from scratch about 90 minutes.
Yes, and then we'll have a couple sessions where we play test that currently unknown dungeon later in the weekend, and I'm also one of the DMs in the Legends of Role-Playing tournament. So if you do have the opportunity to get to Gary Con in Wisconsin this year, we'd love to see you in one of our events, or just hanging around would be fantastic. That is the weekend of March 20th. I'm glad that we could all check in on, remind ourselves when the calendar is. Now, the other things, we are off for the bunch of interesting things we're doing in the near future. So we are actually off next Sunday. So next Sunday, that's February 15th. We are off. We will be back in two Sundays from now for other fantastic stuff that we're doing here at Wandering Dems. So we do hope you'll be back then. So yeah, we are live every most Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we hope you'll join us again in 2 weeks for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.